You're listening to the Fueled by the Outdoors podcast, presented by Blackgate Hunting Products. If you like what you hear, please be sure to subscribe, tell us what you think in the comment section, and leave us a review.
I just hammered a good one.
Drop the Asher!
Never seen that deer before.
It's a tough pill to swallow after having that deer at 18 yards.
Welcome to Fueled by the Outdoors. I'm your host, Chris Leppert. It's hard not to say I'm your host, Rick Cates, because I always hear him say that. I'm joined tonight by my fill-in host here, Josh Luck. And tonight, we're going to let Josh say hello first.
Hello, everyone.
And tonight, we're joined by our good friend, Ryan Lawwell. How you doing, dude?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Not too bad. So, as you all know, we have a new format, and this is our one and only sponsor, I guess you'd call it, partner, whatever you want to call that.
Title sponsor.
Title sponsor. He owns Blackgate Trail Cameras, and turns out to be a slightly good deer hunter as I look around his shop at a, what's Rondo, 94?
Yeah, 194.
194? Gross. What's this gentleman right here?
Gross 166.
166. 159. Okay. And then, is this the deer that's weirdly scored? You had one that, like, you'd never look at that one. Is that one in the 60s?
Yeah, it was 166. Yeah. 167.
Like, he looks like a big deer, but when you try to score him, just looking at him, you're like, but then.
Well, he's got a lot of mass.
Like, when you look at his bases, you're like, that's pretty big.
How much mass did that deer have?
I can't remember the exact measurements. I know one base was 8 inches.
Yeah, there you go.
One was 8 inches, yeah.
Make sure you keep the mic. gotta have the mic right there. Well, we're going to give Rick plenty of editing to do.
Yes.
So, tonight we're going to talk a little bit about late season. As we get into late season, there's all kinds of topics that I feel go overlooked very easily. A lot of people are done. They're tagged out. They've given up. It's too cold. Or if you live in the worst and best place at the same time to hunt big deer, Southern Ohio, you have April weather in January and December.
Tornadoes.
Literally had a tornado a couple weeks ago. Yeah. Really? So what would you start off with if you were to talk about late season hunting right now?
You need cold weather.
Yeah.
Actually, today and yesterday's our first snow of the year. It was an amazing hunt. Tonight we've seen close to 40 deer on my hunt.
Wow.
And over 10 bucks, but
it's a good night.
It still didn't pull in the mature deer that I wanted. It just takes consistent cold. They have to be able to eat, they have to be able to survive. They've not had to do that this year. And it's just made it so difficult. You know, they could leave a field at daylight, and they're full. They don't have to stay as warm as they can, then go lay on a south facing hillside.
Yeah, that's true.
Come back to a food plot at 4:30 or 5 o'clock to try to survive. They've never had to do that this year. And it's made it very tough.
Super frustrating, and that's coming from a guy who was lucky enough to fill his tag in mid November, but. It seems like it's like this each year. I'd get excited. A couple years I ate a tag, and you'd get excited because you get close to muzzleloader season, and you're like, all right, now all we need is food. And you got to have cold weather to mix with it. So you've been doing a little shed hunting here lately. You've got some sheds that you found. I've seen a lot of people post online some fairly large deer dropping. Now, do you feel like that's health related?
Some of them I do. I've really done a lot of research the last couple weeks, and why I wanted to bring this up too was the best rutting activity that I had on this farm And really my other leases was like the last 10 or 12 days of October.
Wow.
And I really think that that moon, when they have that screwy moon in October and that rutting moon isn't until late November, that you have some does that are triggered in that October moon.
Wow.
So that rut gets triggered a little bit earlier, which you think about it. You know, most big deer drop at the end of January, February, something like that.
Yep.
The particular deer that I was chasing was, you know, December 23rd. You throw that moon on a normal cycle, January 23rd, that's, I wouldn't think twice about, oh, well, you know, it's the end of the season. He's dropping.
Sure.
Yeah. December 23rd, it made me feel like, whoa, is he sick or what is going on?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it seemed pretty early.
It did. And I've actually have a couple deer that shed. I just got word today that a close neighbor, another deer that we both know really well, he travels a lot. He shed one side. He came in yesterday with both sides to his trail camera. Came in today. One side's gone. So, and he's a 3-year-old.
Okay.
So, and that says a lot because usually your bigger deer drop first. I have some spikes and 4 points and small 2-year-old deer. They hold clear almost into April on my farm just because they have no stress. They have tons of food.
Ah, okay.
The deer that I was hunting this year that's already dropped, fortunate enough to pick up his sheds 4 days after he dropped them. And he didn't drop till March last year. So that just goes to show you. I feel like a lot of it has to do with how hard they rutted, but also when that moon fell, when those first does were triggered.
I'm going to pay attention to that over the next few years and see.
I really do think
that's
so.
That's interesting.
Yep. Yep.
And I always get into this conversation / debate with people because you always say, oh, the rut's the same time every year.
Mm-hmm.
But I also wonder, like...
I don't believe so.
I wonder... I feel like the seasons are shifting a little bit.
I think you can't tell me that the rut is the same time every year, and every year we're getting later and later fawns.
So, well, that's something I don't get to see.
That's a good point to bring up, though.
I mean, I got tiny little fawns. I'm not kidding you. Like, they look like they are 5 months old here, which they probably are. They were born in June or July because they were bred, and the doe was bred in December.
Yeah.
You think about it. You know, there's 7-month gestational period for a doe. You know, you got, maybe she didn't come into heat in November.
Sure.
Or maybe she didn't take.
Right.
End quote.
Yep.
And then you have December and she comes back into heat again because she still needs to be bred.
Yep.
You know, it's just nature. That could be the possibility. But when you're having all of your does do that and your fawns just keep getting later and later and later, that's what's happening here on my personal farm.
Hmm.
I think it's evolving. I think everything has evolved. Everything
sure.
is getting later.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Like, when you look at our weather patterns, you know, people talk about, like, you know, first it was global warming and now it's climate change. But to me, and I don't know the cause behind it. I'm not going to get into that. But I can tell you flat out that years ago it used to snow in November. And December, like, that happened pretty frequently. Well, now you're lucky to get cold weather in January.
Right.
You're lucky to see snow in December and January. But then we get into March, and what was it, 2 years ago? April? Mother freaking April?
Yeah, it was snowing.
When it's snowing and we get out of the truck in the end of the first week of turkey season and it's 22 degrees.
Right.
I'm not letting Mother Nature live that one down.
Yeah. Chris did not dress appropriately.
I'm dressed for turkey hunting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not an all day rut sit. Like, I'm freaking freezing my butt off when I step out of the vehicle. So I just feel like things are shifting. Things are getting later. So I could open my mind up for that to be a possibility for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think in the past, if you take a round about the last 30 years, the rut has been within a 10 to 20 day period.
Yeah.
I really do think that. That doesn't mean it can't shift. I really do think that it is And it depends on your farm, too. You know, some of them sure. does may be more mature. They don't breed as easily as a sure. 2 or 3 year old doe.
They don't breed as easily?
Maybe not. I'm just saying, for instance.
Okay.
And maybe, you know, the second time through on their cycle or whatever, they are being bred and they're conceiving then. I think there's so many variables that you cannot say the rut is at the same 5 to 7 days every single year. And there will be people disagreeing with me yeah. on this. I've listened
I think
to,
Don Higgins would like throw you off a bridge
he
right now.
He would, and he is super knowledgeable. I listen to his stuff all the time. Me being on this farm for 10 years, I can tell you my rut, it all depends on what's being seen in daylight too.
Sure.
I also own a trail camera company.
Right.
I also am running 50 cameras.
Dang.
And so, I mean, goals. This is just on, no, goals. It's because I have to. but those kind of things, everything has shifted. Everything has changed. 10 years ago to now, if I go back through my trail cam pictures, I've kept everything.
Yeah.
Totally different. That rut, you know, was totally different 10 years ago than what it is now. It may be because of pressure. You know, hunting's more popular. You know, the hunting
yeah, that
lot,
is true.
A lot different. It could go a lot of things. More corn piles. You know, it could be.
Yeah.
You know, because does are more concentrated. Like, well, the buck's just got to go to this corn pile and pick up a doe and take her away.
Yep.
There's a lot of factors
Do
there.
You think, I feel like you've mentioned this before. So, there's a ton of crops here in Southern Ohio. Mm-hmm. So, any of the sprays and all that they use on the crops nowadays, do you feel like that has any physiological change on the does?
You mean like infertility?
Not necessarily infertility, but do you think it changes at all? Like maybe they're coming in later, or they're not as easily bred, as you said.
My uncle thinks that the government is spraying spray to, like, basically eliminate the deer. I don't know how.
No, I actually think there was a study that just came out that showed, like, the newer genetically engineered crops are much better for you or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
I read that.
I also try to tell him, like, you don't just, I guess maybe back in the day, because, I mean, to hit on Ryan's point, hunting is way more popular now, but also way less people gun hunt and way more people bow hunt, take advantage of archery season. So there's a lot more, in my opinion, a lot more consistent pressure mm-hmm. out. So you don't just see everywhere, like along 32 and everything, you don't just see deer walking around everywhere like you used to. And so now he's like, we're all going to die. You know, the government's spraying all the beans. And
well, yeah. When did they crossbows? When did that season start? Because then that essentially allowed, you know, the guys that would only gun hunt, that gave them
sure.
the opportunity
I don't
to
know.
Hunt during archery season.
I feel like it's been around since I've been paying attention to the regs, but I couldn't tell you honestly. I could not answer honestly. Yeah.
That's when I started. I started hunting with a crossbow when I was a kid.
But yeah. also, like, a crossbow in 1994 wasn't really that great.
No. I think it was more of a disadvantage in the compound.
Absolutely.
I really do. It was slow. It was loud. You know, you're pretty much yelling at them when you shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, watch out.
Hey. But now, you know, with the stuff that they have now, I really love Kentucky for the simple fact that they give them their own season.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, it's for my own selfish reasons, of course, but I do think that it's hands down way easier than, you know, traditional archery tackle or a compound bow. So we have a special season for guns for the same reason. So I like that Kentucky does that. And it's not, I think archery hunters get first crack. They get 2 weeks and then the rest of the season, you know, just something. And it helps archery hunters get less pressure. But with that being said, you're cool with crossbows, aren't you? I know some people aren't.
I have no problem with whoever, whatever they kill with, yeah. as long as they're happy.
Yep. Yeah. Happy and legal, man.
Yep.
Go.
And as long
go do
yeah,
you.
Legal is a big thing. Like, you know, you're not doing stupid stuff. I'm cool with crossbows.
Yeah.
100%. Just because that's what I was raised on. My dad prefers that. You know, there's people that have bad shoulders. There's disabled people. There's kids that get involved. That's how you start them. They can't pull a compound at 6 years old.
Yeah, it's definitely a pretty crazy topic, but we kind of went down a we went down a little rabbit hole. These guys are gonna make me giggle my ass off. But anywho, back to late season, if you will. We'll get off the crossbow guys. Although here in the next week or so, we got a little surprise for you.
Oh yeah.
with that said, let's talk about mineral sites. How early do you put out mineral?
Year round.
Year round?
Yep.
Why?
There is if you run cameras enough and if you manage your deer well enough, there is, especially during the rut, the does hammer the mineral.
The does hammer the mineral in the rut.
I don't know what it is about. I don't know if they're being run down, you know, and they need that salt, you know, to retain more water. They're dehydrated. They're craving more salt. I kind of have that feeling because a lot of the mineral is a lot of salt.
Sure.
No matter what you get, you can get good stuff.
What kind do you use?
I've used some Build-A-Bone.
Okay.
That's also a local company. But I use a lot of just trophy rock just for as an attractant. I don't do that for a beneficiary.
Okay.
Or a beneficial supplement for the deer. But... yeah, we're not talking life insurance.
I'm leaving my farm to the trophy rock.
But I used a lot of basically just trophy rocks for attractant. But I also noticed, too, as I've used more like powder mineral, like Lucky Buck or something like that, they don't tend to hit those in the rut like they do just a normal salt lick or trace mineral or something like that. But I mix my own.
Do you?
I buy my own from like TSC, like a 40 pound trace mineral. I mix it up and I got a special concoction that I do.
Same.
So
I'm interested to compare.
Sweet. I'm not telling you.
Shit. I don't care. Well, I'm not going to say because if mine is the same as yours, then I'd feel bad. But
So you're saying you feel like they don't hit the powder mineral as much? In the rut.
Right. Like, I feel like during the rut, because I have cameras on all of my spots.
Yeah,
just in case.
Yeah.
And you do see bucks hit it, but it's mainly does.
Yeah.
Mature does. You can tell, like, you know, they've got, you know, roughed up hair on their back or something. They just went through, like, 3 or 4 days where that buck did not let her eat, didn't let her drink, didn't let her do anything.
Jeezle.
Oh, yeah. They pin them down, you know, in thickets and stuff, and I don't think they can do much, you know, other than...
I got a picture of 3 or 4 does on a mineral block yesterday.
Wow. That's something I'm definitely going to have to get out. I make sure to get mine out in, like, May, June, but I feel like that's not early
enough.
They're
already antler growth at that point.
Yeah.
I was going to try and
get to... February, March.
Yep.
Yeah. I was going to try and get to my father's place within the next couple of weeks and start putting supplemental mineral and stuff out.
Yep. I need to go get some stuff and mix mine up and sell it to Ryan because mine's better.
I'm cool with it. I'm always down to try new stuff.
I learned it on the internet.
I feel like... there's a huge misconception, and I feel like most people fall into it when they first see mineral, right, or they first start using it. Like, I know I was one of those people.
If I want a 400-inch deer, I put mineral out.
Exactly. Nowadays, now that I know more, I tell people, like, look, if you're going to put mineral out, it's a supplemental feed. This is a 5 or 6 year plan if you're going to put it out and put it out all year. And would you agree with that?
I don't do it for my bucks.
Really?
Yeah.
Nope. I don't do it. It is nothing, me personally, I don't think it has anything to do with my buck growth.
So what I tell people now is it's about your does.
Yep.
Your lactating does.
Would you agree, though? So, all right, so let me kind of spin this a little bit. I'm going to agree and disagree at the same time.
I know where you're going.
Would you say that the doe health and combine the doe health with the... fetus, embryo, fetus, and then, you know, fawn health is how you get that buck started off on the right foot.
Absolutely.
And that's how you could add 10 or 20 inches or whatever to something.
The healthier your deer are,
yeah,
the max potential they're going to reach.
Exactly.
That's why it's more of a 5 or 6 year plan.
Yeah.
It's that right. fawn drop in 5 years when you start targeting that buck.
And it's really funny too. The more, there comes some Black Gate picks there. The more I pay attention, it's so cool to watch those does. Maybe other people don't care, but in July and August, those does pound the hell out of mineral. Lactating does, man. They literally, and it's funny, I go around, you know, Batavia, Claremont County, Brown County, anywhere where there's good farmland, and I guess I probably should shit like that on the podcast. I need to just say, go over here. I go to farmland, though, river bottoms, whatever, and put out mineral, and they're like, eh. You go out to hill country and put that stuff out, and it's like crack. Like, they cannot, like Tyrone Bigum's the doe, scratching her neck. Like, y'all got any more of them minerals?
Yeah, they don't get that like they do here in crop country.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting a lot of their nutrients and stuff. And I truly believe that a deer, what it's craving is what is beneficial for the deer.
Absolutely. That's the same with pregnant women.
Right.
They crave what they're missing.
Right.
That's pretty cool to hear you say that.
Yep.
Wow.
I really do think that. I 100% believe that. And especially when does are lactating and stuff, like that's why you see them hit that. It's because they know their body is telling them. I think they listen to their body, obviously.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it says like, hey, you need more than just bean leaves.
Yep.
And, you know, there's no acorns at that time. There's no protein. So the only thing they're getting out of just the salt block, if you put it out, is just sodium.
Yep.
So it's really good to have, like, a good nutritional plan, I guess.
Sure. So.
If you're anything like us, you love running trail cameras. Recently, we started using the new R4G and R4K by Black Gate Hunting Products, and I've got to tell you guys, they are sweet. The R4G is the new cellular camera loaded with features such as the ability to send pictures and videos straight to your mobile device, free HD downloads for both pics and videos, near real-time in-app setting updates, and no-glow IR technology. The R4K is a scouting camera that boasts side motion sensors that help you capture crystal clear 32 megapixel photos and 4K videos in center frame. With a maximum SD capacity of 512 gigabytes, that's right, 512 gigabytes, you'll have plenty of room to hold all those 4K videos and high resolution pictures. Blackgate supports this podcast, so we are asking you to support them. When you go to buy cameras, use the promo code FUELED to receive 10% off your order. That's FUELED, F-U-E-L-E-D, at blackgatehunting.com.
I don't just do just corn.
Yeah.
You've
got a pretty nice mix.
Yeah.
It actually will be available this year.
Nice.
Ooh. So I'm actually putting it on.
I'm going to have to steal a bag of that.
Yeah, a couple five. Yeah, and feeders.
Yeah, you got, so, all right, let's hit on that a little. Oh, it's not in here. Tell me a little bit about your feeders.
Our feeders are actually, I designed them because I was tired of poly feeders.
Yeah.
Now, what's a poly feeder?
A poly feeder is like, you know, that plastic.
Yeah, the ones the squirrels that eat the top out of and get in your
head. Yeah, the squirrels eat the top. They eat the, you know, the shoots out of it. They get up in it. And,
yeah.
So I wanted to design a feeder that was completely varmint proof, doesn't deteriorate in the weather, rust proof, all that stuff. And it's actually ran on our Black Gate app.
Oh, that's sweet.
You'll be able to control when you want to feed on demand. There's a little bit of lag, obviously, with
sure.
the cellular connection to the server to the feeder. But You know, maybe 30-second delay or something like that.
Oh, wow.
A lot faster than having to walk out there. And
Sure, yeah. But the best thing is it's run on an actuator. This is patent pending, by the way.
I like it.
Okay, just making sure in case somebody has an idea of going and getting try to get a patent for it. We did take care of that.
No patents.
It's run on an actuator, so when you send the command, it runs off a relay, opens the actuator for however long you want, which dumps however much feed you want.
Yeah.
And it closes up. So that feed is sealed up.
That's nice.
It's made out of 16-gauge metal. We've actually partnered with Raptor liners for your truck.
Oh, nice.
Truck liner.
Yeah.
We made a custom color. It's like a timber gray. We custom mixed that.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's just a lot of these feeders, man, when you get black ones and stuff like that, they just stick out like sore thumbs.
And they bake the living hell out of your feed.
Right. Yeah, they just get super hot. So we wanted something light colored, timber colored, that would, you know, match anything across basically the United States.
Nice.
Cottonwoods, oak, whatever. And it has little deflectors at the bottom, so the feed dumps out. If deflects it off, they feed on it right there. But also, you don't get that nonstop feeding all night from your varmints, your coons, your squirrels.
Stupid.
The deer, like, once it drops the feed out, you maybe want to drop 10 pounds at a time. They drop that, and they go off to your normal pattern. You can normally pattern deer at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I really wanted to start this. Is I have nothing against corn piles. People can do that all they want. That's perfectly fine. But a doe or a buck on a 50-pound pile is going to sit there until they're
done.
Done.
Yep.
And then they're going to go back and do their thing. They kind of go off their normal deer pattern, I feel like. So that's why I want to do this. Like, hey, you're limiting them, you're supplementing them, you're giving them the feed they need, but they're also going and having to go forage somewhere, like,
yes,
you know, a string of oaks or some honeysuckle or something, and that's where you're staged.
Yeah.
So that's nice. That's really what I wanted to bring back to it, to hunting.
Yeah.
I guess. But obviously you can feed, you can do a 10-second dump and it would dump 100 pounds of corn. So.
Gotcha.
But it is 1,000-pound capacity.
Wow.
That's our first one.
It's a lot of corn.
It's going to be released, but you can put however much you want in there. But we're going to be making smaller ones.
Okay.
As we progress.
Ooh, nice.
So, yeah. So that way it's, you know, someone that's hunting a 10-acre woods isn't going to use they would use a 1,000-pound one in Ohio.
Yeah.
But
I'll use a 1,000-pound one in Ohio.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Dump it 8 times a day.
Those coons would look like Scrooge McDuck or what's the McDuck dude from DuckTales diving in his freaking coins?
Yeah, isn't it Scrooge McDuck?
I don't know if it's Scrooge McDuck, or not. Whatever his name is, though, I think I might be right.
I think so.
But he's diving in all his gold coins. We did. Me and Luke went down to Kentucky and put out like 500 pounds of corn. I had already killed. We got permission on a farm. And I was like, well, I'll drive, you know, and I'll go grab some corn. Let's go down there and put some corn and cams out. I made a corn angel. It was awesome. I had a lot of people were laughing. All the people who, of course, hate baiting are like, yeah, now we're corn. You're like, calm down.
I'm sorry, but if you are in a baiting state and you don't bait, you will not have animals.
Yeah, like on private. Yeah. Yep.
I mean, really, unless it's obviously public. You can't.
Sure.
But even surrounding public, those people are baiting.
Like, sure.
Oh yeah.
100%.
That's why public land, borders are amazing.
Yep.
You figure out a dude's got a corn pile. Thanks, man.
Yep.
I appreciate you.
Cut the deer off.
Let me. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Literally, you're staged like you were talking about. Hey, these guys are coming from this south facing slope. Okay, I'll sit right here. This is good. I've not succeeded in that yet, but it is in the bank for future. So we hit on minerals a little bit, hit on feed. What other are there any other tactics that you take to during the late season to try to target a mature deer?
I mean, as far as food?
Anything.
A lot of big deer, mature deer, I've noticed, unless you're in some serious cold weather, they're not going to daylight.
Yeah.
If it is, it's right at dark, especially on, like, bait or something like that. And then you have, you know, like food plots and stuff that I have. Even then, they have wide open fields they can get into. They feel secure. They still won't hit them until right at dark. It doesn't matter. No pressure. It doesn't matter. I think some farms are lucky, and every deer's temperament is different.
Yep.
You know, their tolerance are totally different. Like me killing a Rondo last year. That deer was the most visible 194-inch deer you will ever see in your entire life.
Right.
That dude loved the camera. He loved feeders. He loved. He just was everywhere. The deer I'm hunting this year, which is basically a rival of Rondo. Rondo actually pushed this deer out last year. Luckily, it wasn't the other way around. I wouldn't have killed Rondo. This deer was total opposite. He hates cameras. He hates being around a bunch of other deer. He's kind of like, I've referred to this 100 times. He's the Grinch. He's kind of in his own little cave.
Grumpy old man.
Grumpy old man. Doesn't want to bother doing his own thing on the same pattern that he has survived on for the last 5 years of his life. And he's not going to deter unless he has to. It's going to have to be some brutal weather.
Yeah.
To get him on his feet. Or the rut.
Yeah. That's one thing that we, it's always funny to hear people talk, oh man, you live in Ohio. Oh, you live in Ohio. And it's like, well, it's not Kansas and Iowa where they get weather that makes deer have to move
right
to a cut corn field or a standing bean field, you know, whatever, cut bean field, Milo, whatever it be, whatever it is. Here you struggle to get those deer to move. I almost feel like early season's way better than late season now.
Mm-hmm. It's tough.
It's so difficult because, I mean, they're basically rubbing suntan lotion on each other, just laying there all day. And then, you know, yeah, do they get up and move? Sure. 50, 75 yards or something in a thick bedding area or whatever. Not anywhere near where you can get to them for the most part.
I feel like what contributes to late season being harder than early season. Like, you could use some of the early season tactics. Like a lot of guys, evenings, right? If you're going to get on them, get close to their bedding.
Yeah.
However, in the late season, there's hardly any cover around.
Yeah.
So they're going to see you from a mile away, even as you're trying to sneak in.
I was looking at that today when I put those, or when I went to check those cameras. Dude, you can see.
Talking about that bench?
Yeah, you can see for, oh, screw the bench. You can see 250 yards up the hill. Like, and so I'm thinking, well, where the hell are they bedding now? Like, where are they? Where would I be? Mm-hmm. I still don't know, but I don't know the place that well yet. But it just, it blows my mind. You know, that's a good point, too, that a lot of people don't really put a lot of thought into is the cover. You know, the cover always changes. And this time of year, I mean, what's your cover? A cedar thicket, a pine thicket, honeysuckle thicket. There's like almost nothing. CRP, I think, really, really helps. What are your thoughts? What do you like? You're the food plot guy.
Well, I have a lot of plot screen stuff. I work, you know, with one company, so I really try to strategically just use their products.
Yep.
What is it?
Domain.
Domain?
Yep.
All right.
Do they have Miscanthus or what are
they don't have Miscanthus. They just have just a plot screen. It's a mix of sorghums.
Okay.
And stuff. It's done really good. Even with the high wind storms we've had.
Wow.
The stand has been amazing.
Nice.
It had, you know, big stems on it. Now, obviously, like, stuff like Real World with Don.
Yeah.
That Miscanthus, it would hold up way better. It being a perennial, too.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I was going to bring up this point. You just said something about it being open.
Yeah.
My deer dropped December 23rd. I picked up the sheds the 27th. And when I picked up those sheds and we were on this ridgetop and you could kind of oversee, you know, my food plots and stuff like that, you could see everything. a month ago, you couldn't.
I mean,
it has just changed so much. Like, the way I approach my setups now in the last couple of years is because those deer, one of those deer is always watching. Even if it's a deer that's below him, you know, maybe it's a three-year-old, and he sees you walking down this edge of the field to get into your tree stand, and he blows out. Well, that big deer is not just going to watch him run out of there.
Yeah, he's on alert now.
He's on alert. He's going to follow him out.
Yep.
Your chances of killing that deer just completely went down to, like, 0%.
Plummeted.
Yeah. You might as well go home.
Yep.
I mean, you can get lucky. People do get lucky.
Oh, yeah.
But your entrance and exit, we talked about this last time on the podcast, is the most crucial part.
I think it's the most overlooked part. Like, people, I think it's the most overlooked part, because you hear people talk about playing the wind, but I do think that a lot of people don't understand what playing the wind is.
Right.
I think that they think playing the wind means keeping the wind in their face and making everything work for them, and
that just puts it
right.
You know, the thing that you said, that Don Higgins said, stuck in my mind since you've said that.
Dude.
Since you said that, it's stuck in my mind, which I've kind of known that all along. Like, you can never just hunt a wind in your face, and you'll get lucky. You will. But if it's not benefiting the deer that's coming into wherever you're wanting him to come into, why in the hell would he come in there?
Right. Literally, that's how he survives. And it's funny, too, because I think a lot of people overlook the fact, you know, if you're not asking yourself why constantly, then you don't understand why. And maybe you did have the wind in your favor and not in his. Well, he came in wind to back because he could see out in front of him.
Right.
Or some, you know, he could use another sense and check everything.
Or he had thermals or
too.
Something sucking down a draw and something like that. You know, just little stuff.
But I think entry and exit, it's hilarious to me how many times I'll get complacent and just be like, ah, screw it. I'm just going to walk this way. It's easier. I'm limited on time. And, dude, when I change that up after a long string of being an idiot, it's like almost guaranteed that I'm going to have an encounter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not going to be a 170 or 200 or whatever, but generally it's going to be either a deer that I'm targeting or a deer that I'm, you know, a three-year-old that I'm excited about for next year or whatever, which those are just as fun for me, because when I get to look at you this year and then kill you next year or the year after, man, that's cool as heck.
Mm-hmm.
So especially on a lot of these, like, micro parcels that I hunt. But with the way you approach that, there's got to be a lot of thought behind it. And I think a lot of people, you know, again, they don't know how to use the cover, the wind. A lot of times terrain helps tremendously when you have it, which is why I also think it's super difficult to hunt those flat farmland deer.
Oh, it's
because
respect thrown right now.
Dude.
Those people that kill a giant on flat, open ground, that's a totally different way of hunting, man.
Dude.
In Ohio.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, you're not going to shoot him with a rifle from 500 yards.
No.
you know, and again, they're probably going to be bedded correct me if I'm wrong here, but generally I feel like they're 50 to 7,500, whatever, yards in the woods, bedded wind to back, watching the field. You know, a lot of times
for
just
open
in
area.
Yeah, just inside. And then also lots of times bedded right in the middle of the damn beans or just inside standing corn, and they've got the wind to their back. So really your only shot is coming in from the side. And how do you see the deer if you're coming in from the side? You know, so it's super, super difficult, and there's a reason why I don't think I've ever had an encounter on true flat land with a big, big, big deer. It's super tough. So
it is.
But yeah, the access. Oh,
that's why you got to catch them deer on them wind shifts.
Yeah,
if you pay attention to it, and there's a south to north or something, and it's not like the deer's watching the Weather Channel. you know, they can sense it. I really do think that. You know, sure. The warmer air masses from a north to a south, something like that. Those deer know they have to reposition. And I think that's when you kill a big deer. I truly believe that.
Get a wind switch in like the middle of the day.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They have to get up.
They have to get up. Otherwise, they feel vulnerable. And if they don't feel comfortable in their bed, they won't. They will not lay there.
Yep. And I think, I never thought of it this way, but you're basically playing the same thing that makes those big deer piss you off when they shed their velvet and get all antsy. Because you watch them all summer long. Mm-hmm. Travel 1,000 yards through a bean field or whatever, and then Ohio comes in. You know, they've had their velvet shed for a couple of weeks or a week, and now all of a sudden it's like you've been shooting at them, and they're all antsy. Well, that wind shifts, and he gets antsy. And those anybody knows big deer, you know, they get anxious, and they can't handle it. So what do? Get up and have to move. And it's funny, this year I started taking note, and I can't tell you how many times I had encounters with either a target buck or a good 3-year-old on an east wind, like, because that's generally in my finding a lot of times your big wind shift where it goes from a, you know, a south or whatever, or, you know, a west to, oh, it's south now. 2 hours from now, it's going to be east, and it's going to stay east until tomorrow, and then it goes to north, and you're like, man, the next 12 to 24 hours is a damn good time to kill that deer. If you can be in a spot, which a lot of time, you know, I think sometimes having a farm like yours, for example, a little more acreage to it, you have the option to bounce around a little bit, but you also, like, You got to guess right, too. You got to be in the right spot where when you hunt a small, you know, those little micro parcels, you don't have the option to bounce around. But, man, you know that you can go right here because it's the only place you can go. But that wind's going to work, and you won't get busted, at least. It's so neat to see. Once you start asking yourself why, when you see the deer and what he did, you're like, oh, that makes sense.
Yep. That brings up a good point, too, on the wind shift. Just like last year, you know, I killed Rondo. You know, I had 4 straight days and I hunted him, killed him on the 4th set. And that day, the wind switched out of the east and went straight out of the west, just like a complete circle.
Yep.
Like, out of in a 1 hour span, just shoo.
Zero choice but to move.
And he came from a spot where, if that east wind was still there, he would have winded me way before he would have got to that field. But it coming out of the west, the wind was at his back at that point. And the only way he could wind that field and check for does, which he ended up fighting a buck right in front of me.
That's awesome.
But it was because he came out in the field and they were face to face. You know, it was just kind of...
Yeah. They were both in the same screwed up conundrum.
Right. And they were down in a little bowl anyway, so I think it was just kind of swirling down there. And
another light bulb going off.
And I think that night, if that wind would have been consistent, he would have winded me before he got to the field, or he would have scent checked the field.
Yeah.
There was a hot doe out there because there was one lockdown with a hot doe out there. But still, that wind shift completely changed, I think, that deer's pattern on how he was going to approach that field. He had to come into that field.
Yeah.
And that's what killed that deer.
Yeah.
And really, since that, since my 2017 buck, it was the same thing. Big wind shift that day. I really knew that wind was shift. So the first 3 hours of my hunt, the wind was awful. It was blowing into my food plots. I was just like, oh gosh, all these does are going to blow out of here. It was like right when the does started pouring out, wind just did a complete 180. And then I ended up killing that deer at 5:15, 5:17 or something like that, that evening. And it's because he had to move. He could not downwind that food plot.
Yep.
He had to come into the food plot to see what was there. And it's just, it's so, I mean, you really think about it, just like you said. You stop and think about it. It's very common sense.
Yeah, it's super simple.
I lack a lot of the time.
Well, I think we try. I think we overthink the hell out of it. Yeah, and then I think in the industry too, we think that there's something you can buy or do that's going to give you this magic pill or whatever. And it's really just discipline and knowing I can hunt here and here's what I need to do or get the hell out.
If you're downwind, you're picked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Period. I don't care if you have whatever product, ozone,
right,
spray, I don't care. If it's a mature deer, he will pick you probably before you see him.
Oh, yeah. What were you going to say?
I was waiting on you.
Oh, I was going to mention that podcast that we listened to, Southern Outdoorsman, where they had the guy talking about...
Canine guy?
Yeah, the canine guy.
1.09 parts per trillion canine needs to pick up on scent and identify it. Let that sink into your head.
Yeah, and a deer's nose is 30% greater than a dog's nose.
Yeah. Even though they did... It was interesting because they touched on the fact that a dog uses his nose differently than a deer.
Yeah, I think it's... What did they mention?
Like, a dog basically gets a treat at the end of the trail.
And it's more of like a predator mindset, right?
Yeah.
Not like, I'm just trying to survive.
Right. Yeah, the dog generally follows a trail, and it leads to an animal to eat, scavenge off of, whatever. And a deer, while they use their nose to find food, they're not scent trailing beans.
Mm-hmm.
They know where the bean field is from the time they come up, and then that's where they go. But when they hit that ground scent or, you know, whatever, you know, they don't, well, sorry, the bucks generally, you know, I think it all depends too on the age of the scent. It's like, you can tell, you go walk out on a WMA and you'll have a buck, you know, you set 10 cameras out, you'll have the same buck on almost every camera the next morning, but you ain't gonna find him trailing you an hour after, because mm-hmm. you know the scent. But those does, buddy, they'll track you right to your tree. They'll track to every camera. I hate them. They ruin my life.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was interesting. You know, you brought up basically nothing really working. We listened to a podcast. Some really cool guys down south run, and they just have, you know. We aspire to be like them one day, basically, because they have some next-level dudes on there, and they had this guy that was a canine handler, trainer, whatever, and trained dogs to track down poachers in Africa and, you know, drug dogs here, and he said for a dog to pass his class, test, whatever you want to call it, they would take 1 gram of marijuana, because that's basically prosecutable all across the board. They take 1 gram of marijuana, put it in a baggie, then put that baggie in a baggie, then they vacuum seal it, and then they sink that in a quart of oil, and then they put it in a car, and the dog has to hit on the car from the outside. And he's never had one not pass. And a dog has roughly 220 million scent receptors, and a deer has like 297, 298 million. So he was talking about, I believe it was, they need 9 molecules. I mean, 9 molecules. That's way smaller than 9 grains of sand. Like, you can't see 9 molecules. That's what they need to identify a scent. That's insane. That's like freaky. Like, how the hell do you ever kill a deer? He was talking about how you can wear rubber boots and it doesn't matter, because when you walk across the ground, you disturb microbes and they put off a scent, just like when you're trimming limbs and stuff. He said that it can last for up to 60 days.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
Yep.
That's freakish.
If you just go and disturb the ground, and I've tried this before. If you just go and not even like a scrape, you just go and kick the ground around and something, you can put a camera on that. And
yeah.
Every single deer will come up and check that out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Not just because they can see it, it's they smell it. They just kind of just navigate right to it. It's just a normal, you know, thing for them, especially bucks. Like, that is just a, obviously, it's a one way they communicate.
Sure.
But especially in October, if you do that, every deer will come to that, just like a scrape, yeah, anything like that. But there's something about working that dirt up, that fresh dirt,
yep,
is really gets them going.
Well, there is another podcast with a guest on it. Who
our minds are literally. Go ahead.
So he talked about using that as a tactic, like getting, playing the just off wind, right? So given a mature buck the wind in his favor, so that way when it comes in, like, you're just off wind, like, you'll be able to shoot him right before he picks you up.
Right.
But he talked about just disturbing the ground of where that line is, so that deer is drawn to that spot on the ground and it stops there before it picks up your wind.
Right. Yeah. So their attention's drawn.
Yep.
Yep.
Not as I'm looking for danger as in what the heck is that?
Yeah. Yeah. What is this? And, yep, you know, you take their attention away for a second, but also could possibly force them into a shot opportunity.
Right.
Kind of like what you would with a scrape or you know, hanging deer pee on a limb, even though I'm still, I don't know, man. The deer urine for me, I struggle with it because anybody who's ever seen a hot doe, man, you know you have a hot doe.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause every buck in the world also knows that there's a hot doe.
There's a specific scent there that they're picking up, and yes, you cannot mimic that.
Nope. I feel like the chemistry of that urine, once it leaves the body, it changes. So do I think that I can hold a bottle under a doe and let her pee in it and then go dump it out? Sure. But once you have that for days, the what is it, like the biochemistry or what, it like the chemical makeup has changed.
I think it does when it hits the ground.
Yeah.
When it hits the ground, it's just like, you know, I hate to bring it back to like food plot stuff, but a lot of your sprays and insecticides and stuff like that, when it hits the ground, it completely changes shape. You know, just like glyphosate, Roundup. You know, when you spray stuff, it's dead when it hits the ground. It's not effective anymore.
Yep.
It's only, you know, a contact kind of deal.
Yeah.
I feel like if a doe urinates and it hits a leaf and stays on a leaf or whatever, that's a lot more effective than it being on the dirt in a scrape.
Yeah.
That's why I feel like your urine doesn't affect a deer.
Yeah.
It's the same thing when you pee in a scrape versus put doe urine in it. Those deer don't know.
Right.
I really don't think that they do know.
I think they don't know because the chemical makeup of all that has changed.
Right. Like, and I think, like, if you eat a lot of asparagus or something like that, maybe they'd be like, woof.
What's this guy eating?
Yeah, where's this doe eating at?
All these other guys are eating, like, cheeseburgers, and then we got a vegan chasing me. This guy eats a lot of plants. Yeah. He's competition. So, we've talked about pretty much everything under the sun when it comes to, you know, food, feeders. We've talked about access. Is there any directional wind on your particular farm or in general that you prefer over any other else this time of year?
West.
You want a west wind?
When I get a north wind, I feel like my, just kind of like tonight, you know, we had this big sub-zero. I mean, they're talking they already have a wind chill advisory for like 0 degrees by morning.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm so glad I'm sleeping in.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to be hunting.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm going to sleep like 1 hour maybe.
Oh, my God.
It's all right.
Do you have like meetings with the people across
tonight.
The ocean? No.
Nope.
Gotcha.
Not tonight. But I still haven't slept in the day and a half.
Good
like that.
God,
so,
dude.
I feel like a west wind, there's something about a west wind and how a deer positions, they can crosswind.
Okay.
If you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So if they set up on a ridge or whatever, and say the wind's out of the north.
Yeah, so they're general. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So they're facing south, north, yep, wind's hitting them in the back of the head, they're watching in front of them where they can't smell. Yep. When they're headed to a food source of an evening, and if there's a west or an east wind, they're walking through a crosswind the whole entire way to their food source, not in their face or in the back of their head.
Okay.
If you think about it.
Yeah.
So if I were, you know, I'm like, man, my nose is the only way I'm going to survive. I'm going to walk to this food source with the wind straight in my face. Well, what if I'm east of him?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that deer's vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where you got to catch your deer and set up on your deer. But I think an east and a west wind, they feel more comfortable. So when you can hunt an eastern and west and get on a food source or in between a food source and bedding, that's when you really catch a deer. I really do think you catch a deer making a mistake on a west or an east, which east has been, you know, this time of year is not that prominent.
Yeah.
Right.
It's usually your north, northwest, west wind. You have your souths.
Oh, yeah.
But, man, those west, it just seems like my plots are just chocked full on west. Tonight was northwest.
Okay.
And, you know, seen 37.
So would you call a northwest a west still?
Yeah, it was a west, northwest.
Like a quartering wind?
Yeah.
Westernly wind.
Westernly?
Yep.
Jeez. They have an advantage.
Yeah. Okay. I like it. I mean, it makes sense, too.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you can get in on the side. You know, as they're using that crosswind, which, again, you know, that takes me back to that podcast with that canine handler talking about a canine being like 80 yards from a scent trail. And people were like, why isn't he's not even on the trail? And it's like, yeah, he's catching it as it's over there.
Right.
He's hitting the crosswind. He doesn't need to be nose to ground. He's running with his head up. You're like, damn.
Yeah, it's insane. And you just think a deer has...
Yep.
More receptors than that.
Yeah. It's incredible. I want to say, he said, bears have 600 million.
Oh, yeah. Bears were like something crazy.
Like, they can smell your thoughts, basically. That's insane.
Yeah, that's crazy. Because I think, too, a lot of bears, successful people, they kill them over bait because that smell is so strong, it just kind of overtakes the smell.
Well, I think a lot of it is, you know, with bears, they're extremely, look at coons, same thing, they're very food driven. Mm-hmm. Turkeys, even though I feel like turkeys are probably about the same as deer, but a turkey can't scent check a corn pile from 100 yards, 150, 200 yards.
I don't know. I saw a guy pose with the turkey and had some scent products next to this turkey.
We saw a dude.
Oh, jeez.
What did he have? He did scent clothing and mineral.
Yes. For turkeys.
He killed a turkey.
I was very confused.
That's annoying.
It was probably the best thing I saw on the internet all year.
I'm sold. I've already bought it.
Sign me up. What the heck's?
What?
So, anyway, I'm going to have, like, lawyers showing up at our door.
Dude, that's why you do this podcast. It's honesty. It's our
thoughts. Well, yeah. It's, I mean,
and sadly
thoughts
enough,
and
a lot more people are thinking the same thing we are.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Than the people that are agreeing with,
yep.
You know, him posing with
mental in a sense. God, I hope, because anybody, I don't know how you think that clothing that was invented for shark divers works on. So here's the one thing I will say. Minorly in its favor, and I think people got the wrong idea. I posted about it like a month ago or something because I got freaking Facebook banned for joking with Rick on my own or in our group, so I wasn't able to post in any groups for like 30 days, and so I brought up the subject of hex, and I always try to stay open-minded. I want to hear what people have to say and then form an opinion, even though I kind of feel like I know when it comes to that, but one of my close buddies is he teaches anatomy and physiology, and I can't pronounce what the hell a shark has that picks up on the electromagnetic force field waves, whatever you want to call it. But I know that no mammals have that. Now, some people did say that is how you know, birds migrate. They pick up on the electromagnetic fields. Do they see them, or do they feel them and it's more instinct? I don't know.
I don't think birds think. I think they just are instinctive.
React.
Yep.
Very reactive animals, I agree. Yep. With that said, I will say, you know, I mean, you may or may not, I don't know exactly how you hunt turkeys, but I've hunted them out of a blind and then the run and gun style.
Mm-hmm, both,
and every once in a while, or more often than you'd like, you'll be perfectly camoed. Nothing, you know, nothing shining, and a turkey will come up and look like you threw a brick at him. I do, because of what I know about birds of prey and their vision, they can see like ultraviolet rays coming off of bacteria. It's how vultures and buzzards find dead animals.
That's how
rotting.
I found my deer.
Yeah. So if an eagle or a turkey or whatever has vision so powerful that they can literally see, this is crazy, they can see a scent trail. So the deer can smell it and the dog can smell it. The damn eagle can look at it. So he knows that a rabbit hopped this way for 200 yards and then he can go look at the end of that and find the pot of gold. It kind of sucks when you're the rabbit when you think about it. Like, damn. But I feel like sometimes, I don't know if it could have been something we ate or the way we wash our clothes or whatever, but maybe we're putting something off and they catch that and that's why they're freaking out. Or maybe they just, I don't know, maybe they're little ass. I don't know. Let's see. That was at 59:30. We'll send that to Rick. That was my first cuss word.
That was your second.
Oh, that was my second cuss word. What did I say?
You said
ship?
Yes.
Jeez, old pizza.
That was at 59:49, Rick.
Jeez, old pizza.
Just wanted to take a second to tell you about all our other content. If you're on Facebook, head on over to the Fueled by the Outdoors Facebook page. We currently have over 18,000 members of people who love the outdoors, from the mobile hunter all the way to the hiking enthusiast. Come interact and talk all things outdoors with a robust community of people. Fan of product reviews, fishing, hunting videos? Go check out the Fueled by the Outdoors YouTube channel. If there's any topic or content you would like for us to cover, just send us a message. And if you like what you're seeing and hearing, then hit that join or subscribe button. We hope all our content fuels your passion for the outdoors.
Oh, man. So, if you had something to close on with late season, what would it be? Ooh, you know what? I ain't letting you close yet. I got one other thing that I think a lot of people overlook. So there's a lot of people that they think that, well, essentially that they're going to like buy comfort or whatever. And I think that you can to an extent if you have like the Kuyu and the Sitka and the First Light and all the nice technical gear. But I also believe that a lot of that stuff is made for sort of like Western style hunting, if you will. I think people forget that even though you have a big giant pair of bibs on or a big parka, you actually need a layer to insulate. So essentially my topic here is dressing for success. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people can't hack the cold and it discourages them from going out when you have a day like today and tomorrow. And yesterday was decently cold as well, but not like today.
yeah, it was about 10 degrees warmer.
Yeah. But being able, and I think people don't realize as well, like, you're not just trying to survive, you know. You're trying to be comfortable enough to where you're not shivering and shaking to death. And you're also trying to keep your focus and attention on executing, you know, seeing the deer moving correctly when you're supposed to on the deer, and then of course executing your shot. Mm-hmm. And then in our case trying to get a damn camera pointed in that direction as well. So what lengths do you go through to you know, dress in the crazy cold elements?
Well, if I can, I'm hunting out of a redneck. Just man. Being honest with you. Yeah. But I can tell you, more often than not, you have to make a move on a deer. Whether that being a climber or a pre-hung set that you already have.
Yeah.
I layer. I wear Sitka.
Do you?
Yep.
Do you have their whatever bibs, the bibs that...
The Fanatic?
The Fanatic.
Yeah. Okay.
I have the Fanatic and the Stratus.
I only speak Kuyu, so I don't know what Sitka calls all their stuff.
So, Sitka, like their Fanatic's really good late season stuff. I wear their Stratus stuff when it's windy. It's kind of more of a wind blocking type. But I really do layer. I wear their system. I'm very strategic with their system. I wear a lot of the Merino.
Yep.
Close to skin. It makes a huge difference. Oh, it really does. And another thing that I've picked up, you know, and I thought about going into the market with this with Blackgate is heated clothing.
Dude, that's getting more and more popular.
Dude, I have a hunt or a heated vest.
Is that thing the bee's knees?
I will not hunt with it, without it. I mean, will not hunt without it. Like, it is. It sucks to have to pack that little lithium battery that's with it. But I'd say, you put the thing on high, heats your neck, your core, clear down your waistline.
I think a lot of people...
Comfort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll keep you out there a little bit longer, a little more attentive.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't, you know, you're not moving around the tree trying to stay warm or whatever. You're sitting still. And
yep.
I hate to say it, but how many times I've looked around the tree while I'm looking around moving because I'm uncomfortable.
Sure.
And I get picked off.
Oh, dude.
Blowing at me in the woods.
Especially this time of year, man. You make the wrong anything, and literally, you didn't spook a deer. You spooked all the deer.
Oh, yeah. One deer blows here, just like tonight. One deer would have blew. 37 would have blew. I mean, they would have all been gone.
They're tail up and taken off, and it kind of to nerd out for you guys a little bit. Some people know this, some people don't. My mind was blown when I learned, so we'll pass it on. But Ryan's talking about this heated vest. A lot of people don't realize, you know, for years, with my boots, for example, I thought that keeping my feet warm meant putting 63 pairs of socks on and then putting on my boots, only to find out later on in life, well, yeah, sweat, but even worse, circulation. Mm-hmm. You're cutting off the circulation to your feet. And then the other part of it is the reason that your fingers and your ears and nose and your toes and feet get cold is because your core temperature is dropping and your body is pulling blood from your extremities to help keep the important parts warm. You can live without fingers or a hand or even, you know, an arm, but you got to have the core going for you. So that's another thing. You know, guys talk about having pockets sewn on their coat or vest or whatever to put those huge hand warmers, body warmers in to keep your kidneys warm. Aaron talks about it. He taught me that. But keeping your core warm is huge. And I don't have a sweet-ass vest yet, but or a heated vest. But I do have a pretty nice little puffy vest that I use. Mm-hmm. And, man, even just that makes a world of difference.
I got a pro tip for you.
Pro tip number 397 from Josh Luck.
Pro tip.
Going this back. Is not the tip of the week.
Not the tip of the
week. Which is coming up next week. Yes. But it's not called tip of the week. It's called just the tip. Go ahead. So you don't like it.
The hand warmers you were just talking about.
Yes. My God.
You know where I'm going with this?
I'm sorry for Josh Luck right now. Go ahead.
If you happen to have an extra face mask in your car, bring it along with you. Wear it for those that like wearing them. Stick the hand warmer in it when it's on your face. Keep your nose warm.
If you're...
See, Ryan's...
I can't wear a face mask.
See, Ryan's
really?
Wearing his No, I'm talking about the surgical masks like you wear in hospitals. Like the masks people have to wear for COVID.
Oh, my God. So, how to get people to never listen to us again, put your mask on.
Remember when I jokingly did that and sent that to you guys?
Yes. So, we were hunting one day, and was it a face mask or a gator that you had?
A gator.
A gator. Yes. That's what I use. I use a gator around my neck. I wear two of them, one on my neck and then one a little higher, so I can pull it up over my nose and ears if things get cold, but it takes quite a bit. Like when it's that magic hour, 45 minutes, whatever, all that stuff comes down. Let's freeze to death and kill a deer. Like I'm not.
If I can't hear,
Yeah.
Everything's off my ears.
Nothing like sitting with a buddy with a loud coat or something that can't sit still. If you're that, maybe you're, man, we might be like best friends now or hate each other if we hunt together because we're both like, oh my God, shut the hell up. Mm-hmm. Because like I love you, Greg. I take my father-in-law out and he's got this like a swishy jacket. Dude, he like turns his head and I'm like, here they come. Here they come. And that's I look and I'm like, God, he's moving again.
Yeah, that's what it's a good example. My dad, I took him during gun season because I want to have him kill mature deer.
Yeah.
And oh my God, drove me nuts. I love you, Dad. drove me nuts because every time he would move, it was just like a swishing sound. Swoosh.
Dude,
breathe loud. He's like, there, and he was just in his chair. And I'm like, Dad, there's no way that those deer, it's deafening to me.
Right.
Like, he's like, oh, there's no way they can hear that at 100 yards. I said, you want to bet?
Yeah. Especially this time of year.
Oh, for sure.
Keyed up.
Cold and echoey. And
yeah. Sound travels. Well, I'm going to start calling Greg Nike. Swoosh. 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 No, I do think, though, that, you know, dressing for success this time of year is huge. One of the other tricks that a couple of our buddies, Grip, Aaron, and then Josh Fox, taught me, those Arctic boot covers, Arctic Shield boot covers, I think they are. You put those on when you get in your stand and then drop a hand warmer in there, and it's like heaven, even though it's never cold enough. It will be tomorrow morning, but I'm not going. I'm going to sleep tonight. I'm going to pray that all my sick kids, all my dying children go to sleep for a little while. They're poor little things. They're Cora brought the HIV home from school, and now I just lost Rick as a friend. No, she brought something home, a little cold. Her and my wife tested for COVID, and it popped negative, but it's been a week. They're all snot-nosed and not sleeping and
All that stuff's going around.
It's colds, been crazy.
Flu A's going around.
Yep.
It's flu season.
Yep.
Yeah, which it is.
If you talk to the government, it's COVID season. There's no more flu no more.
Yeah, that's not true. I work in hospitals, so we see both.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. It's pretty crazy.
3 years ago, it was all flu.
Yeah.
Now it's...
Do you think, so I have, we probably shouldn't talk about this, but it is very interesting, and I always call on people to open their mind. And I think people need to be able to be comfortable and have a place to talk about stuff like this. So with the flu, I almost wonder if a lot of that could be because of all the precautions taken. And I'm back and forth on all this stuff, honestly. I go back and forth with the vaccine stuff. I go back and forth with, you know, well, I mess with you for being a doctor. I screw with you every day. But with that said, I'd get pissed if somebody came to my house and was sniffling and sneezing and coughing. I'm like, why are you here? I don't want your common cold. Like, so now that is one thing that, you know, people are a little more like, cautious, I guess, a little more aware. Where they're like, maybe I won't go to my buddies or go here, you know, whatever. Sometimes, I think a lot more people are washing their damn hands right now, that's for sure, which is refreshing. But with that being said, it is interesting how the flu just kind of was gone.
Yep.
I don't understand why the flu. Do you have any insight on that, doctor? Why COVID, like, is COVID like a dominant disease and it kicks the flu out? Like, how does that work?
I think it can be more transmissible.
Yeah.
So between people, that's why it's, you know, this new.
I know that's the one thing they say with COVID is, like, it's basically, you know, this is probably what you were just saying, but way easier to catch.
Yeah.
And it gets down. But anywho, but I don't want to get too far into this because I don't know shit about it.
They were talking last year because of all the precautions. Like, once he goes away, like, flu is going to be bad. And,
yeah.
And flu A is going around right now. So.
Yeah. It's, although I never, you go ahead.
Just
your
mic.
No, you're good. I was just telling you point the mic at your face.
Just a thought, too. Social distancing and stuff has taken also a lot of the, I guess, germs and stuff away from people. So now we're like reintroducing it again.
Absolutely. Like, I think that's a huge part
sick,
of it too.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It's always interesting to me when my wife switches schools. When she goes to work at another school.
She's sick.
Dude, you ever want to figure out where the germs are, follow my wife. She'll find them. Mm-hmm. She'll get sick for a week or two, and then she's good, and then literally, like,
never
she can't
again.
Catch Ebola.
Yeah.
Like, she won't get anything. she's like, tougher than a rusty nail, dude. She ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, that's actually me leaving healthcare. Man, I didn't get sick at all. You know, going through healthcare, I was around it all the time. I was around flu and colds, respiratory infections, stuff like that. Me being part of family practice and stuff like that, but as soon as I left there, I've been more sick in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Being away from it and more social distance from, you know, people
sure.
that are sick or have infections.
Yeah.
I really do think that that's a huge part of it is now they've, you know, separated everybody and now we're all back together going to events and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's so much easier to catch something when you have no immunity to it for the last 2 years.
Yep.
The cool thing I will say, though, you know, there's been a lot of division over this. And I will say, I think the majority of people, no matter what side you're on, who you voted for, whatever, are ready to just let's go. Like this is pretty much what it is. We're going to have to figure out how to live with it. And, you know, we can't shut stuff down and all that. So I'm excited about that. I was pretty pumped to see that the ATA didn't get shut down.
Yeah.
Because I was, man, when you said that, I'm like, oh no. And I mean, you hear all over the news, like stuff spiking up and.
Well, I think it's the highest it's ever been.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah. I know Cleveland was, I don't know if they are now, they were on the verge of a state of emergency with how many hospitalizations.
Really?
Had. Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's as high as it's ever been.
Yeah. They were talking about shipping down patients to like Columbus and Cincinnati because they can't handle them up there.
Jeez, old Pete.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
See, I had heard that the amount of people with COVID was more, but I heard that it wasn't as bad.
Some of the symptoms aren't as bad, but there's still a lot of people getting sick and it's still causing lots of hospitalizations.
Do you feel like those people are still like the compromised immune systems? And
well, there are some. The vast majority in the hospitals are still the ones that are unvaccinated.
Really?
Yes.
Gotcha.
Because like our hospital system, we keep all the stats like separately like the hospital system does. So,
man, that's I would love to be able to pour through everything. Because you always wonder.
Yeah.
You always wonder who's telling me the truth. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's why you got to have conversations like this. And I think it's important to keep an open mind with it. And, you know, the cool part is, though, I think for the most part, all of my friends are pretty much pro, like, do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know
choice.
What I mean?
If you get it,
yeah,
that's
I mean,
fine. If you don't, that's fine, too.
Right. Don't be stupid about it.
Yeah.
You know
right.
I mean, be responsible about
right.
it, but still don't alter your life.
Don't alter your life and don't try to, you know, trample somebody's freedom, whether that freedom is they don't want to get a vaccine or they do.
Yep.
Go do your thing, man.
It's no different than if you want to hunt with a crossbow.
That's right.
Do what you want.
Poor crossbow guys, dude. Why is it okay to hunt with a bow and a gun, but if somebody gets a crossbow out and they just get reamed? I don't understand.
I think it just makes archery easier. It,
it does. It
kind of gives more of a distanced bow hunting season for people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think people that don't crossbow hunt are like, well, they just have an advantage over me. So if that deer is 70 yards from me, he's skirting me with a compound bow. But with these new Ravens, you can smoke him at 70 yards
dude.
All day long.
Mm-hmm.
Which does suck. I mean, if my target deer is killed by a crossbow hunter at 70 yards, I would be mad. But I also am like, hey, that's what he chose. I could easily. It's legal for me to have a Raven.
Yep.
Right. Yep, you could add a crossbow too, right?
I could literally be packing one too. So.
But the other thing is, I think now I don't disagree though that a lot of people are taking longer range shots these days. But I don't feel like that's what gives you an advantage with a crossbow, honestly. I mean, it's an advantage.
I can
shoot a bow at 100 yards. Not as good as somebody with a Raven, probably. Although I'd shoot against a guy with a Raven just to see what happened. But with that being said, not having to draw and hold and everything. And now
it's the other thing.
The
movement part.
Yeah.
Having to draw.
Like,
and
as soon
stand
as you see the deer at 100 yards, safety's off, crossbow shouldered.
Right.
Now, and the other thing that helps too is a lot of times you have optics, and it's way easier to pick out a deer. I mean, when are we killing our mature deer lots of times?
Right at dark
when the freaking light's at its lowest, and you got those optics, and you know now they make them with freaking
built-in
lit up
range
crosshairs and built-in range finders, and so it definitely makes it easier. I don't know that I'd ever go. I still don't know how I feel about the self range finding scopes and sights. I think that's where I kind of draw my line, honestly. But at the same rate, not only do I kind of draw a line for myself, they freak the hell out of me because what happens when it doesn't work? And then I don't have my range finder. I'm the crappiest yardage judger of all time. So I'd be like, well, we're not taking a shot tonight. But I don't know. So,
everybody's got their thing, for sure.
Now that we've offended everyone.
Yes, it's perfect. Yes. We have ended it the right way.
Any closing thoughts on late season success?
Late season is just a grind. You got to put your time in. Hunt when it's right. Don't hunt often. Hunt when everything is the right way.
I like that.
Don't hunt. I don't know how many evenings, just like, man, it's perfect, but it's an east wind. I'm like, oh, I just can't get in there. Do I take a chance to kill this deer? And then trail cameras will reveal, like, that deer would have easily been, spooked way before he'd have got to that stand location. But, hunt smart, not often, kind of cliche, but it is so true. You can ruin a spot real quick.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
And then also, hunt over your food sources. Hunt your fronts. Your wind shifts is big. A lot of people are like, oh, well, it's just dropping 25 degrees, but it's been a north wind for 4 days straight.
Right.
Well, it may be 40 tomorrow, but it goes from a north to a south. I promise you that's a better hunt than those 3 or 4 days in the 20s.
Mm-hmm. Really?
I mean,
it makes sense, but...
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, just they have to move. They have to readjust. And a lot of times that's going from one farm side of the farm to the next.
You can accurately predict that he's probably going to use his eyes, therefore be in the open.
Right.
And kind of better peg
vulnerable.
Him down. Okay.
Yep.
I like that.
That's just my experience with food plot hunting. I don't always hunt in fruit plots. I hunt, timber, a lot of timber as well. Especially one of my leases, there's no fields. It's all timber. And that's kind of what's made me lean towards, like, the wind shifting part. I've noticed a lot of deer are just more on their feet when you have a drastic wind change. That one day from west to east or east to west or north to south, they are just on their feet.
Yeah.
So pay attention to that. I know everybody's got Onyx or Hunt Stand.
Spartan Forge. It's a good one.
Anytime you see that wind shift, that complete wind shift, not northwest to west, that's most of the time deer don't have to adjust for that.
Right.
It's that 180.
It's that 180 that makes a deer it turns him inside out. It's like, oh my gosh, I am vulnerable now.
Yep.
He may be a little bit more on edge when he gets to you, but he's also very rarely in daylight. He may be in daylight at that point.
Right.
So I think that's a huge, huge advantage to take, into consideration. And then also hunt over your food. When it's warm, you got a warm front, a south wind. Hunt your clover plots, hunt your green plots, hunt your, your brassicas.
Like a true Drury.
Oh, dude. It's so true, though. So if we have like a 40-degree day, like tomorrow's supposed to be 40. for the high.
Yeah.
I will be somewhere where I can see green. I promise you.
So how do you feel about winter wheat?
Winter wheat is also another. I overseed all my beans in winter wheat.
Okay.
So that way it's kind of like a, I have a grain and I have a green together.
Sure.
It's another Drury hit. Green to green, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yep. When it's warm, go green.
Yep.
When it's cold, go grain.
Right.
That makes sense.
Which it's not the protein content, it's the fat. Because, you know, you got carbohydrates and beans, which carbohydrates will spike your blood pressure. Same thing with the deer. It's also going to make you warmer. It's going to make your core body temperature warmer. When you're eating grass, you know, if I eat a salad versus eating a burger, I'm going to feel way warmer after I eat that burger than I do that salad.
Sure.
Yeah. So you just got to kind of keep that in mind, too. A deer is going to go to the beans when it's cold or corn. And then, you know, when it warms up, they're going to pick around the winter wheat and stuff like that. You know, something a little bit more tolerable.
Yeah.
It's palatable this time of year, especially when it's getting a little snow on it. It's perfect right now.
Really?
And that's why I oversee my beans in it. It's like they have both of
– Yeah.
Best of both worlds right there. So I can strategically place my stands to hunt over one food source that's got both of them there.
Okay. Man, I like that. Pierce talks all the time about freaking winter wheat and finding sheds and winter wheat. And I'm like, I ain't never seen a deer eat winter wheat. But I also don't have a lot of, like, this is probably my first year ever having an opportunity to hunt it. And it's still, like, it's a flatland farm and it's tough. It's tough. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. But if I can get in there correctly, I can go kill a doe.
Right.
So, can't kill a buck. Yeah. Sucks.
Winter wheat and winter rye, your cereal grains. I put that on a lot of my corn plots and stuff like that. Corn leaches your soil fertilizer. Hmm. So anything you can put back in as far as organic matter is even daikon radishes and stuff, to even throw some more nitrogen in there.
Till it under, basically.
Till it under in the spring, replanting, you know, no tilling, whatever you're doing. Usually I just no till it. You know, it's already got there. You're not sprouting up old weeds or anything.
Okay.
That has been a deadly combination for me. I killed Rondo on bush hog corn. That corn was picked, but I had winter wheat on it.
Wow.
And when he bred that doe 4 days prior to me killing him, they were eating winter wheat that day because it was like 65 degrees. Mm. They didn't touch any. They didn't touch corn. They didn't touch beans. They were eating green.
That's super interesting to me. But again, like you said earlier, they're listening to their body and getting what they need, and that's pretty much all they get. How about you, Josh?
I'm trying to think of a concluder. So, as our listeners are getting a taste, not only is Ryan the title sponsor, and before he became that, we got to know him, and we like his products, and we also like Ryan in general. But Ryan is a big buck killer. He knows what he's doing. So
yeah,
he will be on here as a frequent guest talking some hunting tactics.
And to kind of touch on what you're saying, too, because I gave this some thought, you know, we try to hit on both sides, because there's a lot of guys like Ryan who have nice farms who hunt private land. They can supplemental feed and do all that. And then we have another side that hunt only public land and they can't use any bait or any, you know, they don't have a food plot or whatever. And, but if you listen to what guys say, generally, no matter which side they hunt on, you can tell who kills big deer and who doesn't. Yeah.
And there are parallels between the tactics.
There are parallels. There's no question about it. And if you talk, I mean, for the most part, people who consistently kill big deer and or have encounters with big deer, mature deer, I should say, whether it be a 4-year-old or an 8-year-old, you know, 120 or 180, those deer are tough. And on public, you know, public land has its advantages and private land has its advantages, and then both have their disadvantages. So just ask, you know, when we have a public land guy on, you know, private land guys, have an open mind. Same with public land guys. There's a lot of stuff, you know, I hunt private land, but I would consider the majority of what I do now public, and it's still interesting to talk to him, Don Higgins, and other guys, because some of the things you pick up on. And you got to think, too, are you going to listen to a guy who sees 10 deer in a year? Or are you going to listen to a guy, not because you think he's great or whatever, but if you got a guy who gets to watch deer every day with cameras and watch deer, you know, you have 30, 37 deer mm-hmm. in a plot, man, you get to hunt like that. You learn stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You see different behaviors and stuff oh, yeah. like that and pick up on things.
Constant education.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And constant. That's the thing, you know, I think that's the thing that links no matter where you hunt. My favorite people. I got to talk to Jake Bush for the first time last night. People that can nerd out on it, like we could talk all night and like literally never shut up about it. Jake, same way. Only hunts public land. Those kind of, you know, deer nerds, basically. I mean, those are my favorite people. So there's another trail cam picture. That's on a camera.
I have another concluder that follows up with that perfectly.
Ooh. Okay, go ahead.
This is just a tip from me, and this is when my success started changing. This is about probably, you know, when I was teenager going into my 20s, was I stopped trying to see deer, and I started to try to kill a deer. And a lot of people get hung up on, like, well, I want to watch this field tonight.
Mm-hmm.
When I started changing that and got, I guess you can say a little bit more aggressive, a smart aggressive.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, hunt your fringes, work in as you can until you figure the deer out. But when I stopped trying to just see deer and trying to kill the deer, it changed everything. That's when I started killing better deer, bigger deer, more mature deer. You know, hunting them on a wind, killing them before they get downwind to me, stuff like that. A lot of people just don't think that way. And it's not that they don't know. It's just they've never maybe been told that, or they don't have much time in the woods. They
sure.
just, you know, they want to enjoy their 2 hour sit.
Sure.
Yeah. Good for you. That's cool. I'm cool with that.
Yep.
But if you're like wanting to be a big deer killer, and a lot of people desire that. I just want to kill a mature deer every year. Like if I kill, you know, 150-inch deer and he's 7 or 8 years, I would be tickled to death every
right.
year. But when I stopped trying to see does and young bucks and enjoying my hunt and
yeah.
actually trying to go kill a big deer, that's when everything changed for me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, you know, that kind of speaks to the fact that they're a different animal. Completely.
100%.
Like when people talk about, you know, a tactic or a product or whatever, working on a doe or, you know, a yearling buck. Yearling buck's the dumbest animal in the woods.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Especially in October and November. They're
oh,
so
yeah.
stupid. So, you know, you have them all the time. And there's times, too, where I've had, you know, three-year-olds downwind of me. And, I mean, for the most part, I'd say that there was something going on there, but I never could explain, like, why didn't you blow? Like, why didn't you blow out of there? But there again, there's little factors in there. But with that said, you know, the mature bucks are just such a different animal. And I think once you come up off, which I think that where I heard this from was the DeQuistos. They talked about that literally what you just said. I don't know if you know who the DeQuistos are.
I have history, Stan.
Oh, okay. All right,
yeah.
cool.
Yeah, I have 1.0.
You have the 1.0? Okay.
Yep. They just came out with the 0.75.
Yep.
Oh, man.
So you know what the...
Jeez. Yeah,
so they've
the
got
0.5,
the 0.5,
right.
Which is basically, I mean, that's kind of a saddle platform.
Taking all my money.
Yeah.
It's but, expensive, but I do say that 1.0 is the... It is...
So I would...
Top notch,
that's
man.
Nice.
People are going to hate me, but that's cool. I would put my beast stand up against that one, but...
The beast stand is nice, too.
I think that... Because the beast stand is lighter.
Oh, I haven't
for
been
its,
in that one.
For its size.
I need to
like,
check it
those
out.
Are, those two are the same size class. The 0.5 is way lighter, but it's also half the size of a 1.0 in the beast stand. But, man, the 0.75... I even said, I'm like... You got the 1.0. I think they have a 2.0.
Yeah.
You got a 0.5. Man, like, I never said a 0.75 in my mind, but I'm like, man, a tweener would be, you know, a pretty smart play. This is like this past season because one of our buddies had bought a .5 and he brought it to us so we could take it to the expo. And I'm like, good God, that's little. But a little bigger, that'd be pretty packable and pretty,
the 1.0 is kind of on the – it's perfect for me because I'm a bigger guy.
Sure.
You know, the .5, I just didn't feel comfortable, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Being in it. And it's nothing against – bigger people can hunt out of the .5. I'm a pretty flexible big guy. I mean, I can get up in a tree, no problem, hang sets.
I'm interested to climb with you sometime.
Heck yeah, man. Let's do it.
We got to do it.
But the .75, I didn't know that. That's going to be interesting because I wanted something just a little bit smaller than the 1.0.
We'll send you some pics and vids from the ATA Sunday.
Yes.
If they're still there. But like you were saying, they're such a different animal, and I think once – you realize that you are not going to kill those big deer in broad daylight in the middle of the beautiful green pasture and, you know, all that. Like, it's not how it works on Lee Lakowski's farm. Like, that's not how things work out. So, with that said, my concluder, super excited to be partnered up, and just to let people know, we secured our building.
Oh yeah!
Tonight. Well, we didn't technically secure it. We got to give her a check, but
by the time this comes out,
by the time this comes out, our building will be secured for the 2022 Mobile Hunters Expo. This will be held in Winchester, Ohio. This is an unbiased show for you to come and test mobile hunting gear, whether it be a saddle, platform, climbing stick, step, ring of steps, tree stands, you know, all the new gorgeous lightweight hang-ons. Anything you can think of pretty much will be there. We've got a lot of vendors interested. We had like 10 or 12 last year, which was our first year. We put it together in 3 weeks and promoted for 10 days, and it went over well. It was kind of a pilot for us. So now that we, you know, have an idea of what to do and know that it can be a success, it's going to be a bash. We've got Jake Bush coming down,
mm-hmm.
and Greg Staggs.
Stag Daddy.
Stag Daddy. And Jacob Emery coming down up, actually, to speak. And we're working on some other people as well,
mm-hmm.
To come and speak. And I think we might have some live music and a little VIP experience for people that are interested in that as well. So, super excited to be doing that. And on that note, appreciate Ryan having us out as always.
Anytime.
It's been fun. This has been Fueled by the Outdoors. I've been your host, Chris Leppert, and I've been co-hosted by Josh Luck.
Yeah. I co-hosted you.
You co-hosted me. You've been co-hosted. And we've been joined tonight by Ryan Lawwell with Blackgate Hunting Products. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great day.
Thanks,
see
guys.
You. See ya.
Set these hills on fire.